Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. With things as chaotic as they could possibly be, and seemingly getting more chaotic by the day, there's so much going on the big picture. The landscape is kind of jumping around, and I found an amazing guy that has a lot of insight, knows a lot about many different things, including the economy, financial situation, but also what is happening to our nation and, frankly, the world. I'm very honored to welcome on Michael Oliver. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you very much, Mel. Love to be here.
Thank you so much. First and foremost, you have a very interesting background. So I thought we'd let you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into some of the topics that we're going to dig into today.
Well, I was originally in academia back in the 70s, working on a master's degree in political philosophy. I thought I was going to be a libertarian thinker, academician. Okay, back then, there were very few around, but probably half a dozen, I'm serious. And I happened to meet Murray Rothbard back then. This is back before even the Mises Institute, which is now the ninth biggest think tank in the country. It's ranked as the ninth most influential, and it's outright libertarian. And they were basically based on Rothbard's thinking. And I happened to meet him and associate with him for a while. But I didn't stay in academia. I went over to E.F. Hutton in New York in 1975. Their headquarters, the commodity headquarters, was there. And why? Well, gold had just been legalized. In fact, there was a group in New Orleans called the National Committee to Legalize Gold that had lobbied for a couple of years. They were libertarians. And it was really a one-man operation. And he got it. He got enough lobbying done to where they actually passed it. Gerald Ford signed it. So gold was legal to trade. And I moved over to futures brokerage side instead of academia. And worked under the guy who happened to be the chairman of the COMEX, which is the commodity exchange in New York where the gold was first traded. He was also head of Hutton's commodity division. So that's my background. Yeah. And in 1992, I left brokerage and started my own research company, which is technical research. So it's quite boring. Okay. we don't tell stories about fundamentals or anything like that, although I'm fully aware of them.
Right.
But it's a very interesting time right now. I started my firm in 1992. It's called Momentum Structural Analysis. And we provide research to institutions primarily, but in 2015, we opened up to retail subscribers. Yeah. And they get our very dry, number-specific type analysis. It's not fun to read, but it's, you know. Anyway, and we've been very accurate. We've called every major stock market top and bottom since the inception of the firm. And even the reports are on our website, olivermsa.com. You can see the reports. Right now, I think we're at a very interesting point in market history, but also political history, economic history, where this is a bigger event than I've ever seen in my life set up to happen. And it's already beginning in various markets. And I think it's going to exhibit itself outside of markets in very loud ways.
Wow. Now, I think everyone feels something is happening. And the craziest part is before I started doing my show, I didn't know that financial news was fake news. I mean, I just thought I didn't watch it much, but I didn't know that all of these different shows, CNBC, and it's grown and grown. But now I spot it all the time. The most disturbing part is that I feel like everything that we're getting from not just the news, but from politicians, the White House, about the economy is yeah. lies. And it's very disturbing because people are suffering. They're not getting the truth. Mm-hmm. And we're on a one-way train, it looks like, to like some kind of demise. And yet no people are really analyzing things in order to help people survive this or get through it. Mm-hmm. It's like total chaos. So when you look at where we are right now, and you know, we're going into an election, so there's always even more, you know, chaos thrown at us. What are you seeing right now that you can say this is actually what is happening?
Well, you made a good point. A lot of the data we get is government issued.
Right.
Okay. Well, you know, that's unbiased, of course. We know that. Okay. If you look at the unemployment reports of the last 3 or 4 months, while the current administration praises it, you know, unemployment, so look at the bottom line number. Well, when you examine the internals of the unemployment and employment situation, you'll see that all the growth in jobs has been in government, healthcare, but primarily like home care services, restaurants and things of that sort, you know, waiters and bartenders and hotel workers. But when you go to the industrial sectors, the key economic sectors, they're flat to down in terms of new job growth. So it's all been distorted. And even the head of UBS trading, Union Bank of Switzerland, said, I think this past week, that doesn't Powell realize this? Why does he keep talking about this? I'm speaking for him now, what he said.
Right.
Why doesn't Powell acknowledge that the numbers are bad? Why does he keep touting the wrong interpretation of the numbers? And, you know, I've heard stories and I can't validate it, but I've heard it on, you know, some news services that the Fed members are very much against what's looks like it might happen, you know, a Trump election.
Right.
In fact, they're giving money personally to the Biden campaign and so forth. So obviously he doesn't want to say anything that would look negative to what Biden is saying. Economy's good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, today they got whacked. A GDP number came in way below expectations, shocked people. Okay. And also a couple of the big name single leadership stocks collapsed today. You know, Meta went down 15%, you know, bang, like that.
Right.
Okay. And some others as well. But so we have this investor sentiment in the stock market. Now, you know, ex-President Trump has said, expect a crash. And you know what? I don't know what his rationale is, but we fully agree. And I'm talking from my point of expertise, right, not from a political want it to happen type thing. Our analysis says we've been topping the stock market really since 2022. And we managed to make a new high recently by a couple percent in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. But most components of the market didn't make new highs. And they only did it because of a handful of stocks like Meta, for example, or Amazon or Microsoft, which are now starting to weaken, by the way. So it's been a heavily distorted vision. Oh, the market making new highs. No, the market really isn't making new highs. It's been broadly topping since 2022, very early. So it's been 2 years of this lateral type, don't go anywhere action, up and down, but still nowhere. We think it's topping. Back in 2000, when we called the top, which was the dot-com bubble, which was also sponsored by the Fed, by the way. You can go back and look at Fed funds rates prior to that bull market. They took them down to the lowest level in 30 years. We had the dot-com bubble.
Right.
Okay. Then in 2001 through 2004, they kept rates down to the lowest level in 50 years. And we had the real estate bubble. Okay. Then in the recent one, with an exception of about 2 year blip to the upside, Fed funds were effectively at zero for now a dozen to 13 years. And then when the COVID event happened, they took it back to zero after taking it up to 2%. So we've had the biggest stimulus by the Fed ever. And sure enough, we've had the biggest bull market ever in stocks. NASDAQ 100 has gone up 16 fold over 13 years. S&P went up sevenfold over 13 years. You can go back and look at 1929 bull market, mid-1970s, dot-com bubble, and the real estate bubble of 2000. None of them had the age. They were all half or less the time duration of this bull market, nor the dimension of it. So the Fed blew the bubble up big time by monetary distortion, plus money supply growth. So when this bubble breaks, it's going to be more horrendous than any bubble that's ever broken before. And I think that's what gold knows. It knows that the monetary excess is coming back massively,
right,
because the governments will panic.
Yeah. And, well, it does appear, though, that they are, that the gold prices are being severely manipulated. Just every time that you
point,
see
yeah,
it, like, so
yeah,
who is manipulating it? Like, because you keep seeing that they're buying overseas,
yeah,
but how does it affect us?
Well, I don't know. I stand sort of in the neutral ground. I've got some professional friends who are more intimate with that information than I am.
Right.
Some disagree that it's being manipulated. Some say it is. All I can say is back in the late 70s, and by the way, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan has come out pretty good on Trump's side, you know, favoring
recently,
him.
Yeah.
But also, he's identified we've got a problem right now. And you go back to the late, he says, we're going to have stagflation. Well, when did we have that the last time? Late 70s. What happened? Commodities exploded and gold led the way. Now, during that rally in gold, the IMF dumped so many hundreds of tons of gold at periodic sales. So it was outright manipulation in a very overt, huge way. Gold would sometimes stumble at it a little bit, back off. But later in that bull trend, it just ate them up. And IMF quit. So ultimately, reality wins. So even if they are manipulating, there's a point at which all they've succeeded in doing is compressing the pressures that are emerging so that when the pressures do emerge upside, they'll be even more dramatic than they might otherwise have been. So if they are, if they've been manipulating, good for them. They're going to get it.
Right. Now, how does it affect us that they keep saying that not just the central banks, but that China and Russia and India keep that they're hoarding gold, apparently, and then they have this whole BRICS thing that they're talking about? Is that affect? How does that affect the big picture?
That could, and I suspect this crisis this time around, you know, we had a bank crash in March of 2023. And we called, it was in January 2023, and they collapsed the banks like 30-some percent in 2 weeks. That's a crash, okay?
Yes.
And we had stories about, oh, it's just some regional bank. The Fed dismissed it. You know, no big deal, okay? Banks, by the way, have never gone back to their high, okay, the bank sector, unlike the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, I'm going to bet that the crisis is not so much with private banks as it is with central banks.
No.
And the government debt market, not the private debt. It's in trouble. There's no question. Because when the rates stay as high as they have, especially the long end of the market, like T-bonds, which are 30-year debt, they're continuing to choke those who've committed and made debt obligations that are now coming due this year.
Right.
You know, variable rates. And those rates aren't pausing. They're continuing to rise. But ultimately, the real victim, I think, is going to be the U.S. Treasury bond market. For the reasons of that reason, plus, you know, we know the government debt has gone beyond the beyond, and we don't even have a major war going. Last time we had debt like this was World War II, okay?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's going to be sort of fun because those who dislike central power from above authority, controlling every aspect of your life, like what's the money, the value of your money unit? You know, they cripple it every year. They double the money supply every decade. So the value of the dollar in your wallet is depreciates every decade. That's why when I was a kid, a loaf of bread cost what? 20 cents.
Right.
It's now $3.80. Do we have a wheat drought? No, we have a degradation in money.
Right.
So, but ultimately, I think it's going to come home this time to the central banks. And at that point, the panic will be even greater on their part than it is when they try to come in and save large like Lehman Brothers back in 2008 and 2009. This time it's come home.
Yeah.
So the crisis is even bigger. And to some extent, if you're against large government and especially monetary control by government, then you can sit back and have popcorn. It's a good football game.
Yeah, well, a lot of people now look back on 2008. I see a lot. There's a couple places that I follow that I think are pretty straightforward, that they look back at 2008 and what happened and think that that appears to be some kind of a manipulation to consolidate banking to keep going forward, because we've seen all these. Rob himself had a bank that was too small to save. We saw a lot of banks go out of business and the bigger banks get bailed out. Nobody ever got in trouble for that. And the same people that were involved in a lot of that then were ending up in big positions in the White House still. And so, I mean, what they're talking about now with this central bank digital currency and getting everything on a blockchain, it seems like a manipulation to kind of predict, like a pre-program us to accept that as the future. And to me, that's the exact opposite of what we should be hoping for.
Well, and I think there's a lot of public skepticism now, and it may not be like on an intellectual, philosophical level, but there's an inherent distrust out there among a large part of the population that this isn't working. You know, and frankly, I'll tell you another story. There's a lot of even Keynesian economists, you know, academicians who normally applaud the Fed are now expressing doubt. I've made a forecast, and it's sort of jokingly, it really doesn't matter whether it happens or not, but I think it will. In the next 5 years, you won't have a Federal Reserve.
I hope not.
Because everybody's going to realize, of course, there's some people already realize, but it's not working. Right. Ever since they've been in business, quote unquote, we've had boom bust cycles based on their monetary boom bust cycles. And they don't do any good. And now they created the biggest bubble in history. When it comes undone, it's going to be extremely painful for the public, for corporations, for municipal and state governments, even CalPERS, you know, which is the California Retirement Fund. They're suffering because they made a shift a year or two ago into more interest rate related, like commercial real estate investments things that are heavily interest rate sensitive, thinking, of course, rates will stay low. And all of a sudden now, that portion of their portfolio is hurting very badly. Wouldn't shock me in the next year or so, or maybe even this year, that some of these public government-run retirement accounts suddenly we can't compensate for inflation this year, folks, sorry, or we're going to have to cut back. And that's when you get real panic.
Right. Yeah. Now, let me ask you, because you know this and I don't, the 12 governors of the Federal Reserve banks appear to go to Switzerland to this Bank of International Settlements every once in a while and then come back here. Who is running the Fed? Like, who really, really is it? So who does Powell and all them meet with when they go to Switzerland?
I'm not sure the intricacies of that, except people like themselves. Okay. And there are intellectuals in various parts of the world, especially Europe and Germany, who don't trust central banks.
Yeah.
But they've been more or less politically suppressed over the recent decades. But when this crisis hits, you're going to hear some voices there that say, hey, you know, well, let's go back to just cut this euro out. Let's go back to some gold-backed currencies. And it wouldn't shock me that, quote, communist China, which it really isn't, by the way, the Communist Party as such rules it. But they're really not functioning as communists. Most of them run big businesses. They depend on international trade. And if you ever saw some of the cities that have been built there, those aren't communes. Those aren't communes, okay? But it looks like they're going toward a gold-backed currency.
Right.
Now, what a world that is, where, you know, the other guys over there go to a gold-backed currency. That doesn't make sense to most Americans. But they're telling the population, the Chinese government is, they're suggesting to the population, don't just buy gold, buy silver.
Right, right, right.
Wow.
Yeah. And on top of that, you know, what I've seen recently now, I guess it's that up to 27 states have put in bills to make gold and silver legal tender.
Yep. Yep.
And why would the states individually be doing that? Are they looking out for themselves?
Possibly, and just internal political pressures that happened to win the vote. But on the other hand, if you think about it in a way, it is a form of secession. Because what they're saying is we're allowing a currency, a money unit, to function as in transactions. Alaska, for example, passed it. Silver and gold, by the way, legal for transactions.
Right.
They're in effect saying we allow this money unit to compete with the centralized dollar. So in effect, they're saying, this is an alternative. It's a rebellious alternative. It's a secessionary little bit. Okay. And Texas is even thinking about having a crypto, but backed by gold currency. And all these things are likely to happen as we move into this crisis more and more.
Right.
And that word secession is going to be, I know the Mises Institute has made quite a bit intellectual defense of the concept in over the past year. And I'm hearing it a lot of places. In fact, there's one factor that few people are integrating into their analysis of the stock market and what might happen. It's the variable of political chaos. And that's not been a factor in elections before, you know, where you really have this sense of total uncertainty. Well, we noticed there was I'm going to get my glasses out here. This is I'm going to quote from University of Virginia Department of Politics.
Okay.
They did a poll of both Biden and Trump type voters. Both sides, and to ask them some interesting questions. It was somewhat redundant and overlapping to make sure they got the right answer each time. But staggering majority of both Biden, 70%, and Trump voters, 68%, believed electing officials from the opposite party would result in lasting harm to the U.S. Okay. Two, roughly half, 52% Biden, 47% of the Trump voters, viewed those who supported the other party as threats to the American way of life. Okay. Three, getting neater here. 40% of both groups, it's 41% of Biden voters, 38% of Trump, at least somewhat believe the other side had become so extreme it is acceptable to use violence to prevent them from achieving their goals. A final wrap up. I'm quoting from them now. This is issued last October, October 18th, the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Okay. A significant share of respondents also expressed doubts about both the future of democracy and even the United States as it is currently composed. Roughly 2 in 5, 41% of the Trump voters in 2024, and at least somewhat agreed with the idea that red states should secede from the Union to form their own separate country. And 30% of Biden voters expressed a similar sentiment for blue states.
Wow.
Wow. Okay, this is not going to be a copacetic election. I don't care who wins it. And that is not factored in to the potential for overall turbulence.
Right.
Factor it in.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to. And that's another thing, because before we came on, we were talking about that we're in kind of uncharted territory in terms of what the future holds. And it's my belief. I travel all over the country. I do this. I try to talk to everyone. I'll go on shows with communists and Marxists and far, like total constitution conservatives, anyone that wants to talk. Because to me, I feel like left of center, right of center, a good chunk of libertarians, non-voters, independent voters, look at the whole thing as it's completely corrupt to the core. That whatever has gone on in Washington, D.C., all the way to the state houses, has become run by basically lobbyists and a public-private partnerships. And all the papers, everything is being written in terms of what's best for a public-private partnership, as I call them, the parent company running America. Mm-hmm. And we are completely being left out of the scenario. And I honestly, like, even those two sides, you can't go, if you go too far right or too far left, fine. But I really do believe if you go left of center, right of center, and then the other people, I feel like we all kind of feel like, okay, the government's broken, like, to the core. The faith in government, and like that thing you just said, is we're fighting amongst ourselves without looking, and I feel like this is by design, that they're keeping us in chaos, and we have like these uprisings, which we know are not organic, every few months, and they're dividing us into pieces, like it's like getting so thin, it's like cold cuts at this point, to not see that maybe we are all on the same side, because what does appear to me is that we're losing freedom. That we're losing, that there's a surveillance state, a totalitarian movement to control behavior on a massive scale. And I feel like people are kind of paralyzed, that they kind of know this and they don't know what to do.
I agree. And I think that the events that are going to happen, and I think there's, you ever heard of chaos theory? You know,
yes.
In markets, you know, they're usually incremental. They trend up and they zigzag, and, you know, it's sort of an arm wrestling process up or down. But then there's periods in time in markets and in events like we're talking about, where suddenly you go hyperspeed. It's no longer arm wrestling. You get there so fast, it shocks people. And I think we're about to have that not only in the markets, but in this, once the markets start to hurt people, and people who aren't even in the stock market can be hurt. They realize that when that stock market comes down, oh gosh, I'm going to get laid off, you know, et cetera. So when personal pain gets worse, and I think it can get worse rapidly, and the data points that the Fed likes to point to, they're going to suddenly get negative following the market down. They rarely get negative before the market goes down, by the way, historically. Right. You don't get the bad unemployment until that stock market starts to go. But when you get that and you get the personal pain, then you get emotional compression. Right. And suddenly it's just hands up in the air attitude. And that's when things can change dramatically in ways we can't even predict, but nevertheless, a rebellion against control from above.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see any other way. There is so little trust. And like you just said, it's the left thinks it's the left. I mean, the right, and the right thinks it's the left, and nobody's talking. And then we have this government in D.C. that clearly does not care what any of us think. They vote in lockstep, when it's like the guy that's representing Wyoming shouldn't have the same exact thoughts as the guy representing New York.
Yeah.
So I think we see that clearly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, when they get together and pass the bills like they just did, you know, right. It's, you know, American, I didn't divide it up, but, you know, with the $61 billion goes to Ukraine or whatever it was, or $40 billion, or whatever, you know, divide that among American families. How much is that per family, I wonder?
Right. Hmm. Exactly.
If the average person knew that, you know, for us, that's effectively, you know, whatever, how many $1,000s, you know, that hurts. And meanwhile, it goes on. But I think now we're reaching the point where the crisis is so large pending, and it is, I will reveal itself in a more chaos theory manner, that the outcome will be more sudden than people expect. I don't think it's incremental. I don't think it takes 5 years. I think we can be substantially toward what we're talking about within a year.
Wow.
In terms of market chaos, personal pain, despair, and therefore political despair. And it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But it suddenly, you know, giving birth to a baby is tough. Sometimes, Right. Sometimes, yeah. Pain yields good, you know.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying too lately, which is like, you know, as bad as it's going to be, and they're going to make it, because I've been saying this too, that the people that I believe that are, you know, kind of acting as the parent company of America, that they kind of are planning for order out of chaos. I feel like there's a Cloward Piven strategy that we'll just get to be like, fine, just do whatever you have to do, just make it stop. And I think that that's the worst thing that could happen to us at this point. Now, let me ask you, because a lot of people bring up, and when I'm on shows and stuff, there's a lot of concern about BlackRock and the power that BlackRock has and Vanguard, and how much power it appears that Larry Fink has. A lot of people talk about, he had made this speech about going direct shortly before the pandemic rolled out. And he's over there at the talking about the Great Reset on the board of the World Economic Forum. Obviously, BlackRock works with the Chinese Communist Party. And people think that BlackRock is so powerful in America that it's got more power, that he and those people have more power than the government, which is very terrifying. What are your thoughts on that, and how much they seem to control?
I don't have any opinion on that.
Okay.
About BlackRock and specifically, but I do know that the intermingling of large corporate entities there, which are not, yeah, they're private, quote unquote, but right. They intermingle with government. In fact, the term fascism has been thrown around against the Trumpers, for example, which is totally wrong. In my book, The New Libertarianism, I wrote back 50 some years ago, defining Merge and Ayn Rand and Rothbard's thoughts, I dealt with the issue of fascism. And Mussolini, who developed the concepts before Hitler came along, was the head editor of the largest socialist publication in Italy. Okay, all he did to socialism, to Marxism, is remove one concept, and that is, instead of the state taking over corporations and nationalizing them, it would merge, in effect, it would control them. It would, the unions, the church, corporations would all be merged together. In fact, the symbol for the British Union of Fascists was on the back of your dime. It's the wheat strapped together. That was their symbol. Ours is slightly different, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't intended to do the same thing, but it's a symbol of what they did, and that is just what we have now. We have a government. No, they don't nationalize the companies, but they control them so much, and the companies deal with the government so much, in a favorable way, of course, that it's a union between the government and corporations. It's not really a free market, especially with the large corporations, and as you mentioned.
Right.
And ultimately, when this reality hits, it won't matter that they're big. Sometimes the big guy, you know, when he falls down, he never gets up. You know, quoting from Good, the Bad, the Ugly. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you hear them speak, I did a show for a week with my friend Norbin Laden in Switzerland, during Davos, and they talk about that they're the stakeholders of a public-private partnership very openly and loudly, is what it is. And it appears that whatever is running the United States of America is also a public-private partnership, because when you follow, which is terrible, but when people run and they get donations and all of that, and now the donations are coming from people that expect something on the other side, And I track on my show, I follow the money a lot. So you look at the NGOs and some of these other groups and then who they're supporting, and then legislation comes. And I just, I don't even understand. To me, lobbying should be illegal. I feel like it's totally taking the voice of the people. And yet we sit here and it continues and continues. And I think that that's a huge problem. Good people can't even run for office because if you can't
why would they want to?
Right.
Why would you want to control other people? Anyway, you got better things to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, Javier Milei down in Argentina got elected, and he's an anarcho-capitalist. He's more than a libertarian. I applaud him. I hope he's read my book. But even Eisenhower, back after World War II, who was hardly a philosophical president at all. He wasn't an intellectual. He was an ex-general. But he saw the reality. And in his departure speech, he said, you know, watch out for the military-industrial complex. Yeah. You know, even he saw it. He was a Republican. And you know, fascism, for example, in Roosevelt's term, before World War II started now, the advisors around him, the intellectuals around him who were left-leaning, they applauded and wrote editorials applauding Hitler's programs, his domestic programs. You know, we have this relationship between the state and corporations. And now when the war started, they stopped immediately, of course. But intellectually, they sided with him, as well they should have, because the same notions dominate politics today. It's the state, big corporations, they'll take care of us. You know,
right.
They know better, right? So anyway, it's going to come to an end, and it's interesting.
Yeah. Now, like I brought up before, that Cloward Piven strategy. So now they have so many people, including all the people that work for the gigantic government, but they have so many people on government programs that the more the better. And now they open the border. So now we have all these illegals on government programs. I would think that at some point that money that is going to all these people, especially the money that they're giving to the illegals, dries up. And then what happens? To me, that's an inflection point that people aren't talking about point.
It fits with the overall puzzle. It's a point of chaos that's gotten extremely painful. And not only for us, but the people coming in too,
right.
You know, both sides.
Yeah.
You know, I see the faces of the moms and the kids, and some of these people are drug smugglers and so forth. I'll give them that. But on the other hand, a lot of them are just want the hell out of the country they've been in, which is a socialist dictatorship, let's say. And they're trying to come here and get a job as a maid, you know, but, forgetting that, it's another point of chaos in the overall spectrum of things. And, you know, it's working in favor of one side, which is fine. These points of chaos often will work in the right direction. I think when the stock market goes down, Trump will sit back and say, I told you. And then I don't know what Biden, you know, I don't know what they're going to do in August. I think that's the Democrat convention, right?
Right.
If that stock market goes down hard between now and then, I don't know how they can simply sit back and say, well, we got a good, can't say that anymore. We don't have a good economy. They're gone. And it wouldn't shock me that it somehow at the tail end there, 3 months before the election, they have to panic. Because that sole argument of, oh, look at the stock market, the unemployment looks good.
Right.
If that goes out the window,
whoosh. Right. Yeah. Now, what do you think Ayn Rand would say, looking at where we are right now from everything that, because you've written books about both her and Rothbard, what would they say right now from their philosophy of what's going on here and what we could do about it?
Yeah, I gave a keynote speech at Mises Institute back in March, and I discussed the merging of Ayn Rand's philosophy and Murray Rothbard's political and economics, which means removing Ayn Rand's politics from the structure and adding his, because she was a limited government advocate. Okay. But anyway, we're entering part three of Atlas Shrugged. Wow. If you remember that book, that's the point where all of a sudden everything starts to collapse, including bridges, by the way. There was a part three, a bridge collapse, a key bridge collapse. Okay. Logistical things weren't working anymore. People started riding trains more because the energy costs were too much, and they didn't want to put it in their car or an airplane to make a long distance trip. They'd take trains. So all kinds of things were going wrong all of a sudden. And all these events that were going wrong didn't seem to have a connection to one another, and yet they really did. They were part of the overall gusher. Okay. And I'm sure Now, if you remember what happened there, instead of getting a Javier Milei to come in and try to help solve things by bringing market forces into play, John Galt said, see you later.
Right.
He refused to save him. Okay. Anyway, I think Ayn Rand and Murray Rothbard, who passed away in 95, she passed away in 82, would look on the scene right now. That's 50 years after they wrote these kind of, for Ayn Rand, it was 57, she wrote Atlas Shrugged. Decades after they wrote this, it's actually now starting to happen in the same way that they both would appreciate, gosh, I was right. But boy, it just took a while.
People are seeing
I think they smile. Yeah.
All over buildings, people are telling me in New York and in LA, there's like signs that say, again, who is John Galt? Like,
no kidding. I
all
didn't
over.
Know that.
Yeah. Fantastic. And then I always say, oh God, you know, like, here we go. So let's talk about what is anarcho-capitalism. I'm hearing the word everywhere now. I turn, which is odd because 3 years ago, I didn't hear it at all. So this is something that's being talked about more and more. And one thing I talk about on the show too, is that definitions are so manipulated that people don't know what anything means anymore. So what does that mean to you?
It's pure libertarianism. Rothbard, who is considered today to be the founder of the modern libertarian movement, he's the core and center intellect of what the Mises Institute, which started in 1979, I think it was. His ideas generated this, but at the time he started, I met him in 71. I was working on a thesis, which later is the book called The New Libertarianism, Anarcho-Capitalism. I thought I'd coined the term. But it turned out I found that he'd written an essay, a small essay, a year before using the term. And when we met, we laughed about there's so few libertarians out there. They really weren't. He says, this isn't even a movement. And the Libertarian Party wanted to make him the president in the 72 election. He laughed it off. And it turned out in that 72 election that they did participate nationwide. You know how many votes they got nationwide? This is how small it was. 3,500.
Oh, wow.
Nationwide, 3,500. I mean, you know, I don't know what party could have done. Anybody could have done that, but there was no libertarian spec.
Oh, wow.
Anarcho-capitalism is simply phasing out statism, control from above, monopoly control of physical force from above. Now, there's certain areas where some libertarians think, oh, well, you still need government to run the police forces and the military and things like that. Those are essential. Okay. Well, I'm not going to argue and pound the table about that, but there are ways that over time, that could evolve away. After all, our notions of what is a norm or a normal cultural political environment have changed over the centuries. So we used to have kings. We used to have bandit gangs. We used to have, civilization changes. And I think some people recognize that, Elon Musk, I think, is on the edge of acknowledging that type of chaotic but beneficial future where suddenly we don't have a monopoly control, a legal physical force of monopoly from above, in all aspects of your life now. Almost tell you how to brush your teeth, not quite, but almost.
I know.
When that proves to be dysfunctional, people will say, there's better ways to do things. And I've even dealt with it in my book 50 years ago on how do you have private defense?
Right.
How do you have things like we take today for granted today, police on the streets to, keep the streets calm. And so how would that evolve? And I won't get into it now. That's not the purpose here. Yeah. And I'm not pounding the table over it. It's just something I think will ultimately evolve as we move toward a free market society. In fact, some of those solutions already exist. We don't recognize it, but they already exist. We already have private police forces. You go to some shopping centers, it's a private cop there. It's not a municipal cop. Some of the times the best ways to conduct a war are not via drafting 50,000 young men to fight their 50,000 young men.
I know.
How about you go in and go after the central core of the problem and use a small mercenary force to do it? You ever seen the movie Dogs of War?
Yeah.
Christopher Walken. That shows how you can conduct a overthrow of a statist power with his thousands of soldiers and do it with five guys and not kill a whole bunch of people. So defense can be done more selectively rather than drafting everybody and, all the government control from above where everybody's body is considered part of the government. So again, I'm not advocating. I'm simply saying these ideas unfold over time.
Yeah.
And that's
a lot of what's coming out, though, of some of the, you know, the globalist type things like the World Economic Forum and the UNR Common Agenda and even the IMF and stuff is about global governance, where they believe that everything is global. And therefore, even in the Agenda 2030, if you read it, it says that nation states no longer work. And everything should be global, of course, to them. So, to them in Davos. But this whole concept of global governance, it sounds like Hunger Games. But, you know, to me, I think the opposite. If nation states were actually like functioning and functioning well, and like you said about the money before, I look at the IMF and the whole of the loans. I look at Africa and South America and the Middle East, and then I see $200 billion going to a war. And I'm thinking, well, couldn't we have, for that same money, couldn't we have all of Africa and the Middle East and South America like thriving? Like, obviously it's a choice, but they want to centralize it. The same people that are allowing developing nations to never develop. So it's, I feel like they're really pushing towards that, at least this higher level global governance, which I think is a total disaster.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen because I think this chaos we're about to see is going to derail their assumptions. Where you're going to have rebellion, you're already getting it, okay? You're going to look at certain European countries that you consider, like Sweden, for example, you know, where you think, oh, they're a socialist country. They're moving away from that. They're moving away from green. There's a lot of revolts in the EU, you know, attempt to consolidate the European, you know, that was an attempt there to turn it into one big thing.
Yeah.
It's not functioning well. And there's enough intellectuals out there who are saying, hey, you know, this isn't working. And when you get into this crisis that we're talking about, a lot of these people are going to ascend in terms of political popularity. Some of them already are, by the way.
Yeah.
Like in Argentina, for example, you know, it's for decades been run by two big parties, always in a socialist direction. And this young intellectual, Javier Milei, goes and kicks their butt. Both big parties defeated them both. You know how he did it? Youth vote. And now he's gone in and dismantled parts of the state. In other words, the opposite of what you're talking about. And this used to be the eighth biggest economy in the world about 50 years ago, Argentina. Right. Now it's, you know, considered, a, you know, who cares? But he's taken government control over rental and property rights and so forth, where they try to make it equal for everybody, you know, that story. And he's sold off those parts of the government. And all of a sudden, prices of real estate, therefore ability to rent something, has collapsed 20%.
Wow.
So people who couldn't rent a place, in a matter of months, it's collapsed 20% because of his reforms. So, you know, that trend that you're defining, yes, it's underway, but it's not going to, I don't think it's going to get there because I think all these events are going to derail all those concepts.
Yeah, and they also need something that I don't think the American people, first of all, I don't think that they can pull it off without the American people being involved. And I don't think the American people, if told that you have to go on a blockchain and be tracked and traced and surveilled every dollar, I that's not in our DNA. Now, let me ask you, something happened yesterday that I think is totally insane. Not only do they want to raise the corporate tax to like 46% or something, but they're talking about also taxing unrealized gains. And I don't think people fully understand what that means. And to me, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, then nobody will, who can survive?
And I think there was a poll I saw somewhere on the left side of my eye that apparently a good chunk of the population likes this tax the billionaire scheme. Okay. Don't they realize that a lot of people who become billionaires, a lot of them are affiliated with the state, but a lot of them are rising from nothing. Okay, Elon Musk, for example, you know, he's created all kinds of private things that used to be government, like space exploration and so forth. And he's made a lot of money and he's hired a lot of people. So when guys get rich, usually it's because they have an idea or a product or service that other people like, you know, and they give him money because not because they're forced to, but because they like, he did something good and that's their way of applauding. They can't shake his hand. Might be on the other side of the world, but they give him money and he gets rich. Now, to deny those people the ability to get rich on their thoughts and their efforts is to, in effect, destroy the future. Why even invent something if you're going to be taxed to death about it?
Right.
You know, you'd have a primitive society guaranteed from day one. So it's, again, it's not going to happen because I think it's going to come apart.
Yeah.
And there is a reality.
Yeah, I hear this also. I'm asking you about terms because you've been around a long time, so maybe you can make sense of them. So the other thing that I've been looking at lately is that it's coming from, I saw Linda Rothschild talked about it a few years ago, inclusive capitalism. Then I've seen Barack Obama talk about it quite a bit, that capitalism doesn't work. So we should change to a model of inclusive capitalism. But when I read it, it sounds like socialism. So, but this is what they're selling. And then you're seeing on, obviously this has happened before, whether underground, many other times on college campuses, but all of these kids on college campuses, forget what's going on today. There is a huge movement of socialism and communism that are also talking about inclusive capitalism. When you hear that, what does that mean to you?
It's their attempt to intellectually sort of include people who think they're defending capitalism. Say, oh, okay, that sounds okay. It's better than socialism, you know. But actually, when you lift up the cover, it's not. You know, it's really, it's just fascism. Again, it's from above. Yeah, there's a businessman. We're going to, you know, it's a concept that won't work.
Yeah.
And because it's simply non-functional. And when we get to the point where the non-functional is painful, and I think we're reaching that. Yep. Then suddenly these ideas just go out the window. I mean, Vivek Ramaswamy, for example, has, you know, made a big deal about this, the corporations, various policies they incorporate into their overall operations. And he's made some good points in that regard. I kind of hope strong fiction is key.
Yeah, he's made good points for sure. Now, what do you say to people out there? Because there are people that get everything that we're saying, and yet they don't know what they should personally do. I want people to weather the storm, to keep their peace of mind, to take care of their family, you know, and I keep telling people, you got to go in individual liberty, individual sovereignty. Are you going more towards freedom and liberty? But for you, somebody comes to you and says, you know, I don't know what to do, what to think. The next 7 months look very scary. Obviously, chaos is going to ensue. What would you tell them are some things they can do to empower themselves or at least to weather the storm, whatever, wherever that goes?
Well, you know, to some extent, political organizing right now is sort of almost impossible to do because the forces are already there. Okay. You know, you can't create, like a Libertarian Party can't suddenly emerge now and make a big deal. They've been swamped by the Trump Organization, which is fine. You know, it has the power to do it. It's going to do it. It's going to take on the Biden, the everlasting state. I think families need to focus on themselves primarily. And I think you need to realize that you need to be out of certain things in terms of risk. I think the stock market is not a place to be. I think that will be demonstrated soon. I think you need to not invest in government bonds. You know, that was always conceived to be totally safe, and I'm not sure that's going to be on the horizon, you know, a year from now. I think you need to, right now, there's one market that's behaving right, and it's doing it in isolation this time. It's gold.
Right.
And related, you know, like today, the stock market down big. Newmont Mining went up 13% today.
Oh, wow.
You know, biggest gold miner in the world.
Yeah.
And so, you know, portfolio managers are even realizing this, even the ones who are not what you call gold bugs, but they run big funds and they are skeptical to some extent. They've already expressed this. A lot of them have about, I don't know about the stock market here. The risk reward isn't quite good yet. They have to be there because if they're not and it's going up, their performance looks bad relative to the competitors. So they lose clients. So they have to be there. But when they sense that it's vulnerable and all of a sudden the data points are starting to shift and all of a sudden the market's getting real wobbly and they look around and they say, what's working? It's been gold, you know, despite any attempted manipulation. Right. And it's a very narrow marketplace, gold miners, silver, very small little marketplace. So it doesn't take much money that gets spooked in the big areas.
Yeah.
It suddenly says, I'm going to move a little bit over there. And it's like a wet bar of soap. And I think families ought to consider putting money into gold. And we don't sell gold, so I'm not in the, it's not my business.
Right.
But that's something I do. I protect my family.
Yeah.
Primarily is the main thing to do.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. I have a partner at Beverly Hills Precious Metals, Andrew Sorcini. He comes on the show a lot. We talk about a lot of this stuff. And, you know, what I've been seeing more and more too is that He actually told me that a very small percentage of Americans even entertain the idea of gold and silver. Yet, I don't know if you've seen that Costco is selling a tremendous amount of gold. Must be people in America that are onto that this is a safe haven for real, that it's not just some commercial they've heard on TV, that there's something to it. Because when I see the Costco, I think middle America.
Yep. And I think that as it progresses and as it remains as a solitary place to be, where you look across the board, you say, gee, it's not working. Now, if you look at 2022, for example, gold had an unchanged year that year. 2021 to 2022 is close. Stock market, S&P down 25%, NASDAQ down 30-something, and T-bonds down 30-something in price. So the 60-40 portfolio that people like to tout as a balanced portfolio got creamed, okay? And now what's going on? The bonds are weakening again. Stock market's weakening again. By weakening, I mean price of bonds going down, yields going up. So those alternatives are both, they're not working.
Right.
And as they become more horrendous, the alternative stands out even more so. And even the Americans, who are definitely lagged to this trend, right? Very lagged.
It's weird. I can't even believe it.
They'll jump on board and the squeeze will get even more noticeable.
Yeah. And also people look at the price of gold. I guess today it's 23 something. And they think, well, I'll wait for it to go either up or down. And that's, I think with gold, that's not the right way to think. And I keep trying to tell people, I think it's just about diversifying and getting at least gold and silver in your savings. Because for me, I for my audience as well, I care a lot more about people protecting their savings. I have a lot of friends that have, you know, kids going to college, so that they're saving for that, they're saving for this. And I just keep saying, well, just put it in gold. And I think gold really scares people. But do you see any way back to the gold standard? Because it seems to me like that would probably be a good thing. And then everyone, you hear people all the time say it's impossible.
No, I think ultimately that's where we're going. We may be lagged to some other major countries in the world and in doing that. But I think once this crisis hits and there's a perception, even on the part of the academicians who have favored the Fed over the last, 100 plus years, it's only been around for one long human lifetime, after all. It's not like a permanent institution.
Right.
Once they realize, hey, you know, this, they just create boom busts. They're not stable. They create instability by their boom bust monetary policies.
Right.
And ultimately affects the stock market, affects real estate, and it always ends up painful. And it's not working. So what's the alternative? Real money. Yep. Money that can't be inflated at the flick of a finger by powers that be, and that holds its value. And by the way, I don't think crypto is going to compete with gold. Crypto, by the way, if you watch Bitcoin lately, is behaving very much day to day like the NASDAQ 100.
Yeah. It looks
like traceable. It's too traceable by the government. That's one problem with it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it looks like they're starting to walk towards regulating it more and more. I saw another guy arrested the other day. And then we have the whole thing. I'm keeping you so long. So I have so many questions. So I'm going to let you go soon, but I'm going to have to have you come back.
As long as you do.
Now, the other thing, though, that's interesting here, too. And this, I just want your take on this, because you are kind of somebody that's had decades of watching politics, watching economy, watching everything, watching what they are doing to Donald Trump in the court system is what I'm getting. I've had a lot of people, international people that come on, and they cannot believe what is happening to Donald Trump. And they say that it's terrible for our country, to the rest of the world. What is your take on the persecutions one after another and keeping him off the campaign trail? So apparently for Biden, you couldn't even talk about anything because it was election interference before the last election. And then you're watching this. So from your take and where you are in life watching this, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is a political effort to, you know, confine, compress the opposition. And hopefully it does some good for him, for Biden, but that's what he thinks. But I think it's going to blow up in their face, because the worst thing he could do right now is put him in jail. You know, you might even have street riots if they did that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on the part of people who never do that, you know, they would perceive it as a totalitarian system. So they've got to keep it subtle, but it's not going to work. There are problems outside there that are so big, and that, especially if I'm right about our market assessment, that, yeah. that we get a chaos theory type event where it right. doesn't take 3 years to get there. It takes you a handful of months, plenty of time between now and the election.
Right.
And suddenly the powers that be are just going to throw their hands up in the air, and there's nothing they can do to stop it. Now, I don't know what's going to happen on the other side of that, but I almost guarantee it will not be copacetic.
Yeah. And the one thing, too, though, that bothers me about these cases is it sets a terrible precedence for everyone else. And nobody seems to care. Though I call them the fifth column. But these people that are running these lawfare things where they mm-hmm. take out one piece of law and they manipulate what it means and then charge, because that mm-hmm. case in New York mm-hmm. with the $500 million settle with no victim for loans he paid back, $500 mm-hmm. million dollars found guilty. And people have to look at that and think, well, this goes along with what you were saying with anarcho-capitalism and everything. Can you even trust the state to not come without a crime and charge you? So to me, there's a bigger implication, less for Donald Trump and more for the people of this country. And it seems that they don't even care that they're mm-hmm. that they're setting up a situation that makes everyone feel like, well, I mean, at least I feel like, couldn't anyone be next if this is the way they're headed? Yeah. So that's why yeah. I agree with
No, I think at least half the population realizes that, and that's a huge percent. Doesn't even have to be a majority. That percent of population that distrusts the state with the capital S, federal government.
Yes, the 1984 state.
No, I mean, yeah, this is, that's a huge factor. And yeah. all you got to do is give them some more impetus, you know, give them some economic incentive to right. rebel against the state and realize that that was been the causal factor of the boom bust cycles that they've had to suffer through. And now this one's huge, and they're persecuting, you know, opposition in ways that has never been done. Now, then hands go up in the air and they realize this is different this time.
Yeah.
This is yeah. not going to be copacetic.
Yeah. Fact but we're going to hope for the best. And like I say every day, I love Hannah Arendt. She said, I expect the worst, hope for the best, and take what comes. And I hate to say that, but in my mind, I just want people to take care of their families and have peace of mind and weather the storm, because I think we are in uncharted territory. But I really, really love everything that you're saying. When we heard you speak last week, I was like, I got to get him on. You're just like a sober voice of reason at the moment in my mind. So can you tell my audience how they can follow you and find you and about your website and all that great stuff?
Yeah, our website is OliverMSA for MomentumStructuralAnalysis.com. And you can see our reports about the stock market archive there, tops and bottoms. And understand a little bit more about what we do, how we do it, why we do it. We've been doing it for 32 years.
Yeah.
So anyway, and I've never, and I'm not overexpressing this notion. I've never seen a situation like this ever. The confluence of events,
yeah.
the tectonic plates that are about to collide. I've never seen such a situation built and ready to rip. And you've got to be on the right side of it. And you've got to protect yourself.
Yeah. And thank you so much. Your wisdom. And of course, everyone should go to your website. There's a lot of information there that you're not going to get anywhere else. And like I said, I what's bothering me the most is that the media is not telling people the truth to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. So if they're all worried about, you know, Donald Trump's trial, and they're not looking at anything that we're talking about, you're talking about, mm-hmm. it's a true disservice. So I really appreciate mm-hmm. your voice out there. And thank you so much for coming. And I hope to see you again, and God bless you. You're a real voice of sanity. Thank you.
Mel, it was great being on with you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkayshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now. Thank you for watching the show. You know, I'm always looking for solutions, and there's one thing that I stress all the time. We have three things that really, really count in this fight to save America: our time, our money, and our vote. Well, every time you spend your money at one of the big box stores or one of the multinational corporations, you are giving them money to fund the controlled demolition of America. They do it through foundations and other means to make sure that our country is divided and not strong and not united. So what you need to do is you need to find a better way to invest in America with your dollars. I have found a solution. If you go to the partners page at themelkayshow.com and click on Set Me Free, Please. Yes, go to the partners page at melkayshow.com. Click on Set Me Free, Please. It's time to make sure that your money is going towards saving America. It's going towards freedom and liberty and independence and away from centralization, control, and the multinational corporations that are running the public-private partnership that is destroying our country. So again, go to the partners page at themelkayshow.com, click on Set Me Free, Please, and get started today.